Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for spending your time with us this evening. The lines are open. We can talk about whatever you want. We're going to the phone lines, talk about whatever's on your mind. I've got some items in the NAPS news section on the Coast to Coast website. We'll talk about a couple of those in just a moment after the break. Stay with us, everyone. Lots of fun still to come here on Coast to Coast. You know, from time to time on the program when I have hosted, I've talked about the banksters, the foreclosure crisis, the bursting of the housing bubble, what it did to our nation. No town in America hit harder than Las Vegas. We've had more than 100,000 families here that lost their homes to foreclosure, primarily because banks playing games, putting the entire world at risk. One of the articles I posted on the NAPS news section there on the website is from Rolling Stone. It's sort of a news story, sort of a commentary by a guy named Matt Taibbi. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I've seen him on these political talk shows from time to time. He's really specialized in looking at the banks, the banksters, what Wall Street has done to all the rest of us. And I just think that this was so well written, I wanted to share it with you. The article is called Bank of America Too Crooked to Fail. And he writes, at least Bank of America got its name right. The ultimate too-big-to-fail bank is a hyper-gluttonous ward of the state whose limitless fraud and criminal conspiracies will all be paying for until the end of time. Take your eyes off them for 10 seconds, and guaranteed they'll be into some trouble again. This bank is like the world's worst-behaved teenager, he writes, taking your car and running over kittens and fire hydrants on the way to Vegas for the weekend, maxing out your credit cards in the 3 days you spend at your aunt's funeral. They're out of control, yet they'll never do time or go out of business because the government remains creepily committed to their survival, like overindulgent parents who refuse to believe their 40-year-old live-at-home son could possibly be responsible for those dead hookers in the backyard. Really well written. Wish I had written something like that. Anyway, if you get a chance to read that entire article, it's pretty moving here. Really well done by that writer for Rolling Stone. Going to the phone lines to see what's on your mind tonight. Start with the wild card lines. Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Hi, Blair.
Well, George, I've given it a lot of thought about banksters since you mentioned it. It's sort of like the Star Trek Next Generation Ferengi are running the Federation, for crying out loud.
please go on.
Well, actually, I wanted to talk about my upcoming travel. I'm going to Java and Bali, Indonesia next month. And I believe I'm up to date on all my TSA carry-on bag policy, never open medicine and food that you have to declare, all that kind of stuff, all stored in a clear, slidey top open courtside Ziploc bag. However, you know, it's going to be about 20 hours of flight time with three plane changes from Phoenix to Jakarta, Indonesia. And I'm thinking of the time to browse the Quran may be in order, as it's the world's most populous Islamic nation. So do you think I might get patted down if such a book is discovered by the TSA agents in my carry-on backpack, George?
Yeah, I think that, or you might get mugged by fellow passengers on the plane who might be eyeing you suspiciously. You may be the only guy I know who's up on current TSA policy, but what's allowed and what isn't?
Well, I found out only 20% of us Americans, George, hold valid passports. So there you go, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to compare that with Mark Twain. I'm sorry. Mark Twain is banned again. If you remember the cycles, Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer are now a no-no in certain public school systems. So the Quran and Mark Twain are sort of together now, I guess, you know?
Well, I don't believe in banning any books, the Quran included. I can't believe there could possibly be a school district that has banned Huckleberry Finn again.
Well, I've been hearing about that, but the idea of browsing for similarities between the Christian faith and the Islamic faith sounds like a good deal since we've been doing all the shoot 'em up and stuff on this planet. Let's do something like, if you remember that book, Autobiography of a Yogi, Paramahansa Yogananda, where he combined the best of Hinduism and Christianity, isn't that the idea? Like John Kennedy, when I saw him on the Test Ban Treaty talk, when he said, in the final analysis, we all inhabit the same small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's future. We're all mortal. I think it's time for commonality right now, George.
Well, I would agree with you. I hope some of the Muslims around the world feel the same way. I'm not convinced that they do.
Well, yeah, I'm going to travel to Borobudur and see that Hindu-Buddhist contribution to a temple base. It looks like a seven-layer wedding cake, and then take that ferry over to Bali. And have you been to Bali?
I have not.
Well, I'm hearing Ubud is supposed to be pretty similar to Sedona, and there's some nice fountains called the Triple Impul Fountains where they have some nice healing water. But the main thing is, I hear that they're very slow, the Balinese. They have what they call rubber time. And I'm thinking, wow, that sounds pretty cool. They're getting things done. They face it squarely. They ignore the dark side. And they realize that it's important for them to conserve human energy in order to maintain a healthy life emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And in America right now, it's basically the Three Stooges movie is coming out. We're getting no place fast, as Mo used to say. We're just rushing too fast. So I think this is going to be a nice little experiment to see what they're doing there right, you know, when they come back here, get everybody mellowed out in Sedona.
Well, it sounds a little bit like what you're describing is a little bit like Hawaii. Every time I go there, it takes me about 2 days to decompress and get used to a different pace altogether. But once you do it, you can see the benefits of it pretty quickly. Blair, you have to take a lot of pictures and let us know how your trip goes. Thanks for calling in. Dawn in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hi, Dawn.
George, how are you? Thank you
Okay.
so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have heard things over the years on this station that have been so wonderful and only 5 or 6 years ahead of the curve of, you know, the regular news. But I wanted to ask a question really quick. Years back, I thought I saw something in the sky, and it was near an armory, and I thought it might be helicopters because there was different lights, like moving around. So I stopped my car. It was late in the summer, and I rolled down the window. I couldn't hear any noise. And I sat there and watched them for probably 30 minutes, maybe 45. And I had somebody nearby, so I ran and got them to bring them back to that spot. By the time I got there, the lights were gone. But I had felt a connection, or thought I did, wondering what they were up in the sky, you know. And then I was going home about 15 minutes later after I took the other person back home. And I'm thinking about it, wondering what I saw and if I saw something and if they saw me. And then a huge ball, I'd like to know from other people that have thought they saw something. A huge ball of light came across my car as I was going down a major road. It was about the size of a Volkswagen and looked like a giant shooting star that was probably 20 feet above my car. And when I got home, I called the police department and wondered if there had been a meteor or a plane crash or something, you know, see if anybody else had seen that. And it was almost like I wondered, had they seen me? And knew that I was wondering, did I see them? And I just wondered if anybody else has ever had that happen after seeing something in the sky they couldn't recognize.
Well, I can tell you, I hope some people will call in with their own stories in that regard, but I can tell you for sure that similar experiences have been reported all over this country, if not all over the world. I would,
Really?
oh, sure, yeah, that there is, some people can have claimed or alleged that they've had interactions with these craft, that there's been sort of a, it's an interactive sort of relationship. You fly, for example, flash a flashlight at the craft, and sometimes they will blink their lights on and off as if some sort of communication is underway. I don't know how you could confuse, though, a ball of light that's 20 feet off your car with a meteor. That'd be a pretty
Well,
strange meteor.
you know, you're thinking, and you're thinking logically, and you're only thinking about things that you know are real. And but it was a huge ball of light going at a tremendous speed, you know, and it was over a major highway in Greensboro, North Carolina, that this happened. And you know, for years, and it was. When I got home and I thought about it, and after I called to make sure no one else had reported anything, I thought, well, they were kind of saying bye.
Maybe. I mean, you know, the fact is that 90 to 95% of all UFO, and we're using that as sort of the generic term, all 90 to 95% of all UFO sightings, encounters, incidents are explainable in prosaic terms. But it's also true that probably 9 out of 10 incidents like that are never reported at all. People don't want to call the police and make that report because
Oh,
those
I
who
didn't
do.
tell them I saw anything. I just asked if they had seen anything fall.
Right. And generally, police agencies, at least here, they will keep you on the phone long enough to figure out if you're a nutcase and might be dangerous to somebody. Dawn, I appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing your experience, and maybe some other folks will call in with something similar. Thanks very much. Mary in Idaho on the wild card line. Hi, Mary.
Hi, George. How you doing, babe?
I'm doing just dandy. What's on your mind?
Well, I hate to get off the subject from the other two people. They were really smart and very interesting, and you have a lot of folks that call in. I love the coast-to-coast folks that call in, but mine's different. I love animals, but there was a wild deer that came up to me. It was a young buck, and I was crying, and everywhere he'd go far away or something, he'd sense I was crying, and from anywhere he was at, he'd come and touch his nose on me. So he even let me pet him on the nose, and people said, Mary, you're crazy. He's a wild deer. But he was very, very tame, and I went to take a picture of him with my rabbits. He posed with my rabbits by a tree stump, and do you know, I took a couple of pictures of him, and I took the film out, and it got ruined.
Do you think the picture was ever good, or you ruined it?
I hate to think. I don't want everybody to think I'm crazy, but I've been communicating with animals. I'm just drawn to them, and they're drawn to me. I even made friends with a skunk.
Well, I'm not sure that's crazy. I mean, I think it's a really interesting line of research, and there is some serious research underway around the world into interspecies communication. And I think it directly relates to the topics that we talk about here. What if there were aliens? How would we communicate, or how would they communicate with us?
Yeah. George, thank you so much for not saying I'm an idiot, because a lot of people don't believe me, but a lot of people are fascinated because they know me. And one lady came over and visited with my skunk, and I told her, she's lifting up her tail, don't get too near to her.
Well, a lot of folks are uncomfortable with things out of the norm, but you're in good company here. This is our bread and butter.
Thank you, George. You're so sweet.
Thank you, Mary, for the call. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, John in Tulsa. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Yes.
How you doing?
Wow, pretty good.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to bring up something I saw on TV about 2 years ago. It was an interview with a man from Intel and some other company, and they were producing models out of a tank of a shiny liquid that looked kind of like mercury, except it was colored. And one of them waved his hands over the tank, and a model car rose out of it.
So this, what kind of trick is this? What do you make of this?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see the very first of it, and never saw it again. It was apparently only on once.
Doesn't ring a bell with me. I would ask anybody else who saw it and knows how to explain a little bit further to call in and share that information with us.
That's what I was hoping for.
Well, we'll see, because I didn't see it. I don't know, but that sounds intriguing, and we'll see if anybody else calls in. Thanks, John. West of the Rockies, Doug in Alaska. How you doing up there?
Yes, I'm doing okay. How are you?
Okay.
Okay, I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is to do with the caller, was it? It was last night. It had to do with the alcoholism.
Well, I wasn't here last night, so share with me what the caller said.
Well, my interpretation was that a person can just quit drinking and everything is be okay. Well, the guy's wrong. Alcoholism is a disease. And you're born with it. It's like getting cancer. You just can't quit getting cancer. And so I don't know where I'm going with this, but anyways, the other point I had is I worked, or I still work for a police department. I'm not a police officer, but I work for a police department, and I work undercover. And I was listening to the person that called the other night. He was a police officer, I listened to that.
Autism is a disease.
And he's totally right. It's a dangerous occupation. But what I want to say about working for the police department undercover with narcotics and drugs is that the police, they say they got your back, but when it comes down to it, they don't. They really don't. I've made probably 3 or 4 dozen busts within the last year.
You're not making the bust. You said you're not a lawman, so you're an undercover sort of operative.
Correct. I'm making buys, and they come in, and the police bust them.
And what do you mean that they don't have your back? Meaning, how have you been endangered or been left out there on your own?
Well, it's like right now, I'm living on a boat here in Alaska.
And life is good. That sounds pretty good.
No, it's not. It is dark and dangerous down here. There's nobody around. And, well, for example, like today, the last lady I busted, I was at the unemployment office today, and she walked up there, and for some reason, they let her out of jail. And the police don't understand how come the judge let her get out of jail, but she got out of jail. And she walked up to me today, and she says, you just killed me. And I said, well, what do you mean? She says, well, now I can't get my liver transplant. I said, and? And she said that since that she got busted for drugs, she can't get her liver transplant, and she's going to die. And I'm like, well, you shouldn't be selling drugs. Well, the first thing that came to my mind, but, you know, it's making me feel guilty for what I was doing with the police department. And if there's anyone out there that can give me a suggestion.
You mean to ease your conscience or what? I mean, you know what you're getting into. The whole war on drugs, we could do a show on that. And I think George did a show on it the other night. I have some pretty strong feelings on it, that it's a miserable failure. I'm not sure that throwing people in jail is a good idea. However, this lady is selling drugs, you're saying, as a way to fund her transplant?
Well, no, she said that as I got her arrested, that now she's not able to get her liver transplant because I think she's going through the state or something like that. And since she got in trouble for drugs, the state's not going to give her liver transplant. And now she's
I'll tell you what, Doug, I wouldn't lose too much sleep over it. You didn't get her arrested. She got herself arrested. If she's selling drugs, she knows what the consequences are. But I would think if you're in a small town doing that kind of work, that the word probably gets out pretty quick. Better watch your back there. Thanks to all the callers. Good callers here so far. A lot of folks on the phone lines. Lots more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Looks like the lines are pretty full. We'll be going back. I had some good calls so far. We'll see what else is on your mind. I'm George Knapp, in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I've got a couple of messages from Coast to Coast listeners. One from Joy Williams, who helped me with pronunciation, or I should say mispronunciation. The guy who wrote that article in Rolling Stone, his name is pronounced Matt Taibbi. And boy, I butchered that one pretty well. Thanks, Joy, for helping me out. Also got a message from a guy named C.F. Gray. You'll recall the phone call we got, the inquiry from, I think it was John in Tulsa, who was asking about this TV show he saw with this weird process. According to C.F. Gray, one of our listeners, it's called stereolithography. Stereolithography. So, John, if you're still listening, I hope that helps you out. Going back to the phones, and a lot of folks hanging on there. First-time caller Jason in Louisiana. How you doing, Jason?
Hey there, George.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to speak to you.
You too.
I've been listening for quite a few years. First time I called, obviously. Just wanted to tell you real quick, I had a buddy, Dwayne. We were roommates for probably a little better than a year, and we'd stay up all night, burn the midnight oil, listening to you guys because, you know, we're both intrigued with the show. And Dwayne passed away about a week ago, young age, 26. And basically all I wanted to say tonight was thank you to you, all the staff, everybody involved with Coast. I'm kind of choking up a little bit. I'm sorry. You gave Dwayne and myself an outlet to plug into where we could get answers, more importantly, form questions. And I want to thank you guys for this show. I thought about it while I was waiting to get on the air. And I was like, you know, I hope maybe he has all the answers now. And then I thought about it a little more, and it's like, you know, maybe not. You know, that would take away from it. I feel that some things should be maybe left a mystery.
What if he came back? What if he came back to share the answers with you? Would you freak?
Well, I wish he would. I know I wish he would. I, you know, if it's possible, I mean, I don't know what happens after this life, but I don't think I would freak. I've listened to you guys. I've listened to all the stories from people, and I think I could accept it. You know, it may scare me at first, but I actually thought about it today. You know, it was like, man, you know, all the conversations that him and I had, you know, during the commercials or after the show, and it's like, you know, does he know the answers now? And I thought, you know, I wish he could come back and share these things with me, you know?
Boy, I've had the same thought, Jason, over the years when I've lost people, whether or not they could come back, whether when I go, I could try to get back. It's a intriguing, mind-bending questions, but I would say this. I really appreciate your call, and it's no exaggeration to say that Coast to Coast is sort of a family. I mean, we are linked together, inexorably linked together by our interest in these kind of topics that much of the world would say is nonsense or too weird or ridiculous, but the fact is that millions of people have open minds and are interested in these kinds of questions, big questions, the biggest questions, and it is a family in a way. So your family is sending you positive vibes right now. We're sorry for your loss, but you're among friends here, and we're very glad to have you as our listener and part of the family. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. And if your friend comes back and answers some of those questions, I hope you'll call us back and let us know about it. Wildcard line, Brogan in Denver. Hi, Brogan. How you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. How about you?
Okay.
I just wanted to, oh, by the way, every time you guys play the lightning thing, man, I almost kind of, it would be cool to see a lightning or a thunderstorm every now and again. But it just reminds me of some thunderstorms and stuff as a kid. But what I wanted to talk about, I'm currently in college and stuff, and I looked into it and did a little research on, you know, the religion of Islam and the current conflicts and stuff that are going on. And I kind of wanted to share some of my findings.
Okay.
I found that a lot of it, you know, I mean, the Quran itself cannot, it's not like the Bible where it can be reproduced. It's considered, you know, sacred and all that, and it's not really allowed to be reprinted. So a lot of the Qurans and stuff that you have are, you know, they're 500 years old, you know, really old. So a lot of, you know, especially, you know, a lot of the poor people and stuff cannot afford a Quran. So what they hear and what they know about their religion, they get from the mosque. So when you have one guy that gets up and stands up in the mosque and, you know, maybe quotes one line, you know, that says we have to fight the infidels, we have to have a jihad on the infidels or something like that, you know, that's what they all believe. But they don't show them the next page where it says, you know, that we should not fight for, you know, we should not fight, we should do this peacefully, we should fight the jihad peacefully and not forcibly and violently. You know, it's just kind of interesting. So you have all these people who believe, you know, a lot of times that they're doing what they're doing what their religion calls for. When, like I said, on the next page it says not to do it that way. So I kind of wanted to get, you know, your thoughts on that, and you know, kind of just share that.
I appreciate your insight and on this, but you, Brogan, would you agree that all religions can be manipulated in that way? You know, you have Christians who believe diametrically opposed sort of doctrines, and you have Christians and other religions who've been led down the path to a bad place by demagogues and manipulative people who want to selectively edit what the Bible or other holy works have to say. I think the Quran has certainly been misused and misinterpreted by extremists for their own ends all over the world, and we have certainly paid a price for that. But other religions, including Christianity, have done similar things.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought it was interesting because I think, you know, Islam itself takes a pretty bad rap a lot of times. And, you know, especially with all the conflicts and stuff that are going on. But like I said, I kind of wanted to get across that it was, you know, coming from mixed messages or from manipulation of the text or the religion itself, I guess, you know, in the same way that, you know, like you said, Christian documents and things like that are manipulated as well.
Well, it seems like, you know, it is certainly fair to say that the terrorists who have targeted us, the folks who carried out 9/11, or at least were involved in it and seizing the planes, were Muslims. But it doesn't mean that all Muslims hate us and want to kill us any more than it means all Christians want to kill all Muslims. I mean, it, as mentioned, I mean, you can, in the hands of a master, all this stuff can be manipulated for somebody's not so noble ends. Brogan, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Norman in Alabama on a wild card line. Hi, Norman.
Hey, George Knapp. How you doing out there?
All right. What's on your mind?
I've just been thinking, and I know I've been listening to you for years. I've seen you on television, you know, over the years. I actually had the opportunity to go out to one of the UFO congresses out in San Jose a couple of years back. But at the end of it all, I'm just going to ask you this question. Do you think disclosure will ever really happen? I mean, every year you get up on YouTube and there's a video of a, you know, I've seen something from the supposedly a KGB video of some live aliens, which look real impressive. And, you know, all that is good, but sometimes you tend to lose hope. I look at the state of the world right now. I don't see how human beings can have the capacity to actually bring the peace that we need down here on this earth. And I know that's probably a cop-out position to take, but, you know, if there are positive ETs out there, I think they are the only ones at this point that could probably lend a hand to help solving this crisis and this mess, because humanity is like near the end of a ledge right now, and is not getting any better. There are good people down here, but they are not being listened to. And I just feel that it might take intervention, you know, whether it's from the Anunnaki that Zachariah Sitchin spoke of or anything else. I just want to know, what is your thoughts on things like that?
Well, I'm not holding my breath on any intervention or help from our space brethren. If you believe the reports that they have been around here basically forever, as long as humans have been around, I haven't seen any evidence that they're helping us a whole lot. There are people who believe they have intervened in a positive way. I'm not convinced. So at most, if they are ETs or whatever, it seems like they are passive observers who are watching us from afar. Maybe they're following the Star Trek directive. I wouldn't count on them helping us at all. The people who have claimed to have encounters get mixed messages from these folks who communicate with them. On the question of disclosure, my position has been expressed on the program a couple of times. Heck no, it's never going to happen. It will never, ever happen. And anybody who thinks it will happen is fooling themselves. I support the disclosure movements, the folks who are pushing to get some sort of a definitive statement out of the government, but I think it is never going to happen, and for some very good reasons. I think our government, for example, has painted itself into a corner. It has lied about this phenomena since the beginning. I mean, we know this from the paper trail of documents, which in my mind is the most compelling sort of evidence in the whole UFO field, things that the government wrote that were never supposed to be seen by eyes other than folks with classified clearances, things of that sort, things that were written long before there was a Freedom of Information Act, which have now come out, in which the government discusses these things are real, they're from somewhere else, they can fly circles around our best technology, we better keep a lid on this. And there was an official policy that was enacted, encouraged by the Robertson panel in 1953, made up of CIA scientists, who said that UFOs, whatever they are not a threat to national security. However, the continued reporting of UFOs is a threat, so we need to debunk this topic. We need to strip it of its aura of mystery. We need to institute a ridicule factor, the laughter curtain, make fun of people who see these things and get control of it. And that's what they've done ever since, which is why people in my line of work generally don't take the topic seriously, why scientists and academics have not been fair in their evaluation of the evidence. They've made up their minds without looking at the evidence, and the result is that we never get a fair and unbiased investigation of these topics, which could be the most important of all. I think that the cover-up is real, that that they have probably siphoned millions and millions of dollars from legitimate national security programs to keep it going, in essence, stealing money. And I think the bottom line is that's a reason why disclosure will not happen. They have lied to the American public, to the world. They've lied to Congress. They've stolen and siphoned money. And as a congressional investigator who is working on black projects once told me, if it turns out to be true, if they've been lying to everybody all the way along, stealing to keep this cover-up going, then if and when it comes out, they're going to go to jail. Some of these guys would go to prison. I think that alone is a reason to not come clean on all this stuff. I think they probably disclosed about as much as they can. I suspect that whatever storehouse of information and documents and film that once existed is no longer within the realm of government. It's been moved somewhere else, unless it's been destroyed, to have sort of a another level of control so that we can't access it. And I'm not holding my breath for disclosure. I don't think it'll ever happen. I encourage those people who are working in that direction. I wish them good luck, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Thanks, Norman. Appreciate the call. Earl in Massachusetts. Hi, Earl. How you doing?
How you doing? How are you tonight, George?
I'm okay. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk about a few things about when I was stationed Area 51 with my father. He set me up with a security job. Me and my father were not close whatsoever. I just used to work the booth right out in front there with machine gun, and I never went 20 feet beyond my booth the whole time, but when I was there, right around the time the Roswell lights were coming out.
What, the Roswell lights, you're saying? What?
Yes, yes.
So what year are you talking about?
The lights around Roswell, New Mexico.
Well, if you're talking about the Roswell crash, that's 1947, so you weren't in Area 51 then. What year were you there?
No.
Earl, what year were you working there in Area 51?
1957.
Yes. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. And were you military or were you whack and hut?
Military.
Oh. So tell us more. What did you see? What was the experience like?
Right around the time where the lights were coming out, about 9 hours after the fact, I seen a convoy of black SUVs pull right into the facility as fast as they could, and I didn't know what was going on. I just worked the booth at the time, but they seemed like there was a very serious urgency, and they could not wait to get through the gate as fast as they could. They almost ran me down when I was coming through. I had to draw my machine gun on them, and I didn't understand the urgency. And then a military truck had pulled up and almost mowed right through the gate at the time. I mean, do you have any other takes upon this? Because my father was in the facility at the time, and I could not get any information upon him.
Did you ever ask him afterward, after you were both out of it?
Yes. Yeah. Has that incident ever been recalled to your knowledge?
No. In 1957, let's see, Area 51 was 2 years old. I'm trying to think of what... I'm not sure. Roswell was not 57, though. It was 47, so I'm not sure what incident you're talking about, but I'm sure a 57 was probably a very busy UFO year. I think that was one of the years of a big flap, so it's uncertain what that convoy might have been carrying. But you said they were SUVs. Are you talking about maybe Jeeps or something like that?
SUVs and military vehicles. No military paint, though, but military drivers, all black vehicles.
Huh. Earl, did you know what you were guarding at the time? Did you know what was inside the base?
No, not at all. My father would never give me any insight. I wasn't close with him at all. And, you know, I'm just curious more about it. I mean, it was more of a summertime type job, you know, just a couple of years in a row. And then I was out. I was out of the military right after that.
You had to have a clearance, though, right?
Yes, of course.
Did you have a queue?
The clearance was only to go towards the maintenance garage, and that was it. I could only drive so many miles upon 51, and that was it. I had no clearance whatsoever other than the gate and the maintenance garage.
I see. Did you ever? You didn't ever see anything flying then out there?
Well, yeah. There's all types of stuff that shoots over the base, and I mean, you're out in the desert, you see some crazy things.
Oh yeah. Well, I've been out there a lot of times, so. What were you going to say?
I'd also like to talk about another thing. Just recently, I found out that one of my family members actually went to the hospital recently, and they had an MRI done, and they had found out that this female has an extra vertebrae in her back, and she supposedly... 1 in a million with an extra vertebrae. Have you ever heard any takes on that as well?
I have not, but I'll ask our audience members if they have any information on it. It sounds like you got a really interesting family there, Earl. I would have to say you might be the only father and son team to ever work at Area 51, at least the only ones I've heard of. I do know of a father and daughter team that have been out there, but not at the same time. And the extra vertebrae, that's... sounds like a mutation in your family there. I do appreciate the call and your insight. Anybody else who worked at Area 51 or in general environment, you're welcome to call. We go back to the phone lines with your calls right after this. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM.